Okay, call for a moment of silence, please. And make pledge allegiance.
Pledge allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Charlie Hopkins.
Here.
Dennis Olson.
Here.
Harry Robbins.
Here.
Ken Offlinger.
Here.
Clark Hopner.
Here.
Bonnie Anya and Paul Greeno have both requested to be excused tonight.
Think about it. Bonnie's stepfather passed away yesterday, so that's why she's here.
So moved.
We have a motion on to approve. Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. We have no recognition and awards. No.
Do you want to vote for Paul Greeno also?
I thought we voted for both. But, and Paul Greenhill?
The motion was intended for both.
Okay.
Has to be separate.
Yeah,
be
separate.
Okay.
That's the motion was not intended for both.
Okay.
I'll make a motion. Do we have a excuse?
Oh. That's very nice of you.
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. We have no recognition and awards, no audience participation. Do we have any written communications?
An email dated May 7th from Bill Beck regarding Lane Depot. A fax dated May 8th from Joel Douglas regarding building fee increases. And an email dated May 9th from Brendan Reed regarding the Lane Depot.
Just a question. Do we respond to any of those, or do we just acknowledge the fact that we received
them? Yes, we do respond to some of them. If they request a response or, you know, I think some instances they're just making a statement.
Yeah.
But if they say that they want to discuss it or hear back or I wait, you know, I look forward to hearing from you, that kind of thing, then we do respond.
So what about Bill's letter? He asked us about emails, support or whatever it was. I mean, it's a city. I mean, we've already had a position, haven't we?
That's kind of up to you if you
individually.
Yeah.
Mark?
Yeah, did we respond to Joel Douglas?
No.
If I read this, I don't think he understands what happened.
Yeah, he doesn't get it.
Yeah, it's kind of what I thought. So maybe we should respond to him and tell him what it is. He won't do it.
He won't.
He'll sue us, yeah.
Yeah, he's referring. He calls them building permits. They're really not building permits.
Well, I would say he has every incentive in the world to make his applications as soon as possible.
We can let him know that he's confused.
He believes what he wants to believe.
Maybe Charlie would like to take that.
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, so going back to Mr. Beck then, where are we in sort of Blaine's responsibility or what we've said we were going to do in relation to, I guess, what really is two things. One is the idea of getting an Amtrak station here, and two is then potentially using the existing station for that. Is there anything we've agreed to do or anything we ought to be doing?
The city council, the only position that the city council has taken was back when we had a delegation that came into the council meeting to talk about support for moving the terminal or the train station over to the property that the Port of Bellingham owns, that in the master plan someday is going to be a park. And they had approached the port, and the port had basically said, well, you know, we've got some concerns about that. You know, if the city's on board and we'll guarantee this, then, you know, we'll look at it more favorably. But if they're not, then, you know, we have some serious concerns. So they came to the city and asked for the city council support, and the council's response was that that you didn't have any objection to them moving to the port property, but you had a concern that if the funding was not in place, that it could be moved and then sit there and become an even bigger eyesore to the community. And so the council would not support the move until they could show that the funding was in place, not only to move the building, but to renovate the building, and that there was a plan in place to operate the building. And so that was pretty much the position of the city council.
Well, I mean, it seems to me where we find ourselves today is that if the goal of Mr. Beck's group is going to be met, it's going to be met by getting an Amtrak stop here in Blaine. And so I guess my question is there anything from an advocacy standpoint that the city of Blaine wants to do in order to push that agenda, or are we okay with continuing to have Mr. Beck send us letters giving his thoughts on what should happen and not really doing anything about it?
I think that my own opinion is that, you know, Bonnie is kind of, she's become very involved in this whole train, the Amtrak issue. My own opinion is that the council should consider taking an action on passenger service to Blaine. And if we do get that, then it becomes an issue, is that station adequate and yada, yada, yada. But the key is to try to get the train station. And it's a little, it's probably a little unusual that several communities on the other side of the border, city councils have endorsed this and actually attended the meetings, your meetings, and we haven't done that yet. And, I would hope that you would consider doing that much, is to endorse the effort to try to get some type of passenger rail service to Blaine.
I thought we were going to, it was a kind of almost an automatic that we were going to do that.
But we're not on the record.
Well, Mr. Mayor, if it's okay with you, I'd like to ask if maybe I could work with Bonnie and Mr. Tomczyk, and we could bring something to the next council meeting for consideration.
Great. I think that would be good.
Gary, just a couple of points. One is, isn't there a gentleman working on this from a, I forget the name of the group.
Yeah, he met with you.
Yeah. Bruce Agnew.
And
I thought we were trying to be very supportive of what Bruce was trying to accomplish, and that's what Bonnie's been doing.
Yeah, but the difficulty with, let me preface this by saying, I quite like Bruce Agnew, and I think he and the Cascade Group do some very good work. But the problem with, if that's our stance on it, is that Bruce's sort of area of concern is all the way from Vancouver down to Eugene,
yes.
And he's working on a number of different projects. If this is something that's important to us, I think we need to advance it.
I agree. I think, and the question is, Gary, how would we do this? To whom are we going to direct?
Well, that's why I'd like to maybe work with Bonnie and Gary, and I can help them do that.
Okay, because yeah. I thought it was the Cascadia group that we were going to sort of. I think that's what's happened north of the border, is that they have expressed their desire to have a train stop in Blaine through the Cascadia group. Is that correct? Or have they taken it up with Amtrak or whoever was going to run that?
I think the Cascadia group is kind of a conduit because they're involved in doing some of the planning.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the support goes through Cascadia to federal government and to the state government and different places that have the decision-making authority and the money. This project, I think Bruce said this, this project in Blaine will not get done unless there's a big federal commitment to rail service between Seattle and Vancouver.
And it's got to be from both sides. We're going to have to work in Victoria and Ottawa as well to get support on the Canadian side.
So would we be taking this up with our senators in Washington?
Absolutely.
So would we be writing letters to them, or is that what?
Well, that's what I'd like to work on, and we can bring it back.
Okay. Yeah. Now, the other thing, do we not have something from Burlington Northern to tear down the station? Is that not still pending somewhere in our?
It is still pending.
So they could do that anytime.
So well, they need a demolition permit in order to be able to do that legally.
If they apply for a demolition permit.
They have applied for a demolition permit. They had agreed to defer any action on that for a year.
And when's the year up?
I would have to check. I don't. We're probably halfway through it.
Yeah.
What it was is they needed to submit a SEPA checklist right. to provide additional information on that demolition, and they would likely have to do a historical review to record the building, however, that would be the typical mitigation, and then they could proceed with demolition. So that's where we are. At the time that I told them they would need to submit a SEPA checklist was right about the same time that council requested that they not take any action and give the group some time to work, and everything stopped then. And as I said, I think we probably are about a halfway through that year.
Well, that's probably a consideration that you want to take into the fact that you only probably have 6 months to pull this thing together, otherwise they may proceed. Dennis, do you have a question?
Yeah, just a little concern after listening to the folks from Canada. It sounded like Blaine was going to provide the parking.
Well, I don't know who. There's two issues to the parking. One is what space is available, and then the idea of who's going to pay for it. Those are both issues. You know, my assumption is that if we're going to have rail passenger service here, that there probably will be some help in providing the paying for the parking and the renovation of the train station is part of that. But I don't know for sure what our role would be.
I think it's fair to say that we're talking about step A here, and who pays for parking is like about step Q. We've got quite a long way before we get there.
But it comes up.
Yeah,
but there's no sense in even discussing it until we know we're reaching the station.
Yeah. Well,
Ken, are you happy with where we sit at the moment?
I'll chat with Bonnie. Maybe we'll schedule a meeting with Gary here the next week or two and try and bring something to the next meeting.
Okay, so are you happy with that?
Good.
Okay, let's go on to commission, committee, and board reports. Clark, do you have anything for the Blaine Economic?
No report.
Northwest Economic Council?
No report.
Blaine Tourism. Ken?
The Tourism Advisory Committee did meet last week. We completed a review of a tourism vision for Blaine. Have we talked about a time to bring that to the council? I was just seeking more for informational purposes to share.
Oh, yeah, informational service purposes could be.
So maybe bring it the next meeting?
Well, I think it would probably be best that we have our transition to our next meeting and then take it to, or just take it to.
Well, my recollection is that we did approve it and everyone signed off on it, so I don't know that there's any reason to wait for another Tourism Commission meeting. I think we can bring it to the council and staff's ready. So. So hopefully then at the next meeting we'll bring that. This is a document that we've worked on for a number of months, but I think after our discussion at the last meeting and reminding ourselves what the purpose of the document is, I think we're ready to bring it to you. We also discussed a number of other events and activities that are coming up this summer, including the beautification work that's going to be coming up here in Dayton City involved in that. I know staff's working on that as well.
The Red Loan Committee, do you have any on that, Jeff?
No report.
Okay, WTA, how about Drayton Harbor Shellfish, Charlie?
They have a meeting Wednesday, and the library has a meeting Wednesday, the attendee.
Yeah, the Library Committee, Charlie?
Wednesday, also.
Senior Center Liaison, Dennis.
They had their tea last weekend, and they made $4,000.
And this, they have a sunk tea.
Yes.
What else? What were they putting in the tea?
And they have a young guy that's working up there now 20 hours a week with the from the Opportunity Council. And this coming Saturday is another pancake breakfast. So that's an order.
She still sends emails to whoever has done up for the pancake.
Pancake breakfast. Okay. Anything else, Dennis?
No.
Okay, how about the Planning Commission? Michael?
Something later from the Planning Commission. I do have a short report from the Park and Cemetery Board. Lincoln Park, our work up there on the trees and the logging is finished now. The park reopened at the end of last week. It did take longer than we expected, mostly due to the very wet and windy weather. But we will be doing some additional work up there. That's more like landscaping, sort of cleaning up some of those areas that we were working on opening up the views into the park at. We will probably come to you with a request for a budget amendment at the next meeting. We're going to receive about $6,000 to $8,000 in revenue for some of the wood that was sold. We had no idea how much that amount would be, so we didn't put it in as a revenue item because it was sort of just a wild guess. But now that we know, we'd like to have that come in and then be turned over into an operating fund for parks so we can pay for the logger, among other things. So we'll bring that to you in another couple of weeks, probably. At Brickyard Park, you'll probably see playground construction this week. It was actually scheduled to begin today. I don't know if it did because I haven't been down there to check. And then there continues to be ongoing work at Marine Park with some shoreline restoration. In particular, we have a community group of some volunteers, mostly residents of the Salishan neighborhood, that are doing little things here and there, trying to deal with invasive species and weeds and things down in some of the beach areas. So it's looking pretty good. That's it for parks.
Okay, Law and Justice Chief Haslip is not here. Small Cities Caucus, Gary, there's a meeting tomorrow.
We're meeting tomorrow, yeah.
Okay. And I have no report for the Whatcom community. Whatcom Council of Governments. We have a meeting later this month. Okay, City Manager and Staff Reports.
All right.
Manager?
We've got some real good ones tonight. Let's see, let's start out with our Public Works Director, Raven.
Oh, good evening. Got a few things to report. First, I'll just let you know I gave you a copy of this Consumer Confidence Water Quality Report. It's actually a Department of Health Department that we ship it out each year in June, and we're going to be putting that in everyone's water bill. So just wanted you to have an advance copy. Thank you. Also, before I do the MPDS, I actually have a little presentation on that. I'll save that for last. Wanted to give you a update on the Peace Portal project. We actually have our pre-construction meeting for that next Wednesday, so we'll know more specifics about their construction timetable then. The 8th Street project, we are getting that ready to add as well. That's looking like it's going to hit the paper on the 23rd for a three-week advertisement. Bids opening on the 13th of June and a council award on the 25th of June. What I wanted to let you know about that is that project, when it first came to me, was looking like it was going to be significantly over budget. So we've been working with our consultant to scale it back to get it kind of in the realm of what our budget dollars are, because those are pretty fixed. As a part of that, we've been doing some value engineering, and I just wanted to inform you a little bit about what some of those changes are. First, because the project includes quite a bit of pavement restoration and resurfacing on 8th Street, we are going to pull about $40,000, which is about half of the pavement amount, from our street maintenance fund. So we're going to be plugging some more local dollars into that project because we think it's very much qualifies for that. It's probably one of the worst streets in town as far as pavement condition goes. We are going to be creating some bid alternates in the project. The bridge approach, as it's coming up to the bridge over I-5 here, we are going to be leaving that as an ad alternate. The reason for that is it's really WashDOT's bridge approach. it happens to be really bad and it's settled, and we've been putting a lot of money into slapping more pavement down that keeps settling. But we really feel the right fix should be done by WashDOT. We do have it in the plans, and if we're able to include it as a part of the grant funding, we'll proceed. But if we end up leaving that last 100 feet, I wanted you to understand why. That is really not our bridge. In addition, we're going to be utilizing some of our lighting crew to potentially finish up some of the electrical outlet wiring. So the contractor would put in the conduit, but if we need to save some costs, we will save the actual pulling the wire and everything by our crews. The banner arch, we had a pretty hefty little structural item for putting in the kind of the old-fashioned poles and then a very elaborate arch from which to advertise all of our different events. At this point, again, depending on bids, this will be an alternate. We're going to just put in the poles and a cable, and it'll be hung on the decorative poles, but still be hung on a cable like it is now if we're able to afford the more steel archway for those banners in the future. We have the design for doing that. And then there's some small savings that we're finding with finding different suppliers for benches and trash receptacles and so forth, which actually were somewhat forced upon us because one of the suppliers was a Canadian company, and because of the funding, we have to use all U.S. steel. So that's some of the value engineering that we've been doing for the H Street project, and hope to see that going out to bid later this month. And then finally, the Marine Drive project is getting ready to go out to bid this week. We expect to open bids on June 5th and bring it to you for an award on June 11th. Are there any questions on that before I talk about MPDS?
No questions.
As you know, we have been in the midst of getting information together to respond to Department of Ecology. But before I got into what our response was and for what, I wanted to explain a little bit about the background of the petition and what MPDS permit coverage would entail. So first of all, MPDES stands for National Pollution Discharge Elimination System. And I've listed here some of the key dates of the response. There are some of those dates are things that were mandatory for ecology. They have a certain amount of time to get back to us. That May 2012 expect DOE decision that I have here is actually ahead of that schedule. They're hoping to get that response to us by the end of this month, in order to do what they need to do to get us on track with the August 2013 permit. So what that means is if they decide, yes, Blaine, you have to have this, we would not have those requirements until August 2013. If they are delayed in getting the response to us, they could miss the window statutorily that would then put us into the next permit potentially. And as I understand it, there's actually been enough ruckus by local governments in response to the new permit that August 2013 date might slip on their end to make it easier on local jurisdictions to adapt to the changes. Some of the things that permit coverage would allow for, these are not bad things. More public education and involvement, finding illicit discharges and detecting them, eliminating them, just overall looking at stormwater quality and stormwater management. And some other areas would include low-impact development, retrofits of existing infrastructure, mandatory record-keeping and program tracking, as well as mandatory discharge monitoring and reporting. So some of these things we're already doing, and I will talk about that. And some of these are things that would be mandated by the permit. So some pros and cons. Well, if we were covered by this permit, it would entitle us to get some grants from ecology. In fact, they just put out a press release, I think today or yesterday, announcing all the grants that have been awarded in 2013 to other local jurisdictions who are permit covered. I believe Bellingham got something like 6 grants this year as a part of their permit. Some of those grants would include our startup costs, retrofit of existing structures, paying toward helping us find impaired waters and remediating those, and also kind of retrofitting to low impact development where that's where there's the capacity to do that. There would be definitely more focus on the Drayton Harbor water quality, which is a concern to all of us, as well as improvements to our stormwater management program. Some of the drawbacks to that, or I would say the biggest drawback to that, is the cost. These grants that I mentioned are not a guaranteed thing. In fact, the Bellingham, up until this announcement was made yesterday or today, was under the impression that they only got 1 out of the 6 that they applied for. It's also from our local research known that the grants will not entirely cover the cost of the program. So possibly half of that cost. It's anticipated that at least one full-time position would be required to fulfill just the reporting and monitoring requirements of the grant. And that doesn't include the time it would take for them to implement projects. So thus, there would be some impact to other programs. There would be increased documentation requirements, and along with more regulation often comes higher penalties. So those are what I would see for drawbacks. Highlights of the petition, or I should say are some of the key areas that they asked us to respond to, related to first our population. There's a criteria in the permit that relates to a storm system that serves a substantial population or area. There was an assertion that City of Blaine discharges to impaired or sensitive waters. Also, that City of Blaine is a contributor of pollutants to the waters of the United States, and that Blaine does not have the program or the staff to address water quality impacts of stormwater. So those are the things that we focused our response. And I just have one slide on each of those 4 things, and then I'll wrap this up. First, the population number. They claimed we had a growth rate of 20% a year and 80% over 10 years. We responded, this is false. There's actually no way that that's the case. Our research actually showed an average growth rate in the range of 2.5% per year. At the highest point in the last 10 years, it was about 4%. And I think that was, I don't want to say what year it was. I haven't, if you are curious, I actually have a little table. Based on our growth rate that we have, we calculated out 2.5% a year, and the magic number of 10,000 of population, which was what they were kind of zeroing in on, we wouldn't reach until 2041. They used that 10,000 number and said that we should be combined with Birch Bay because of the fact that we were a bubble city when we were together. The resources actually has since detracted that. They sent a clarification, as you saw in the dates that I provided, that they removed that from their argument. So we just say that that got removed.
They took off, we're not together anymore.
They took that out of their argument. That's right. So they really focused, the only remaining argument they had relating to substantial population area related to our growth rate. And that's why we took the time to actually peel it back year by year and gave them the real numbers. And they also made some comparison to the county growth rate, which we thought was pretty irrelevant. Next, the City of Blaine discharged a sensitive or impaired waters argument. Well, as you know, we have many stormwater outfalls into Drayton Harbor. However, the watershed for Drayton Harbor is largely outside of Blaine's jurisdiction. So we pointed that out. We also pointed out that we have been a long-term supporter of the Drayton Harbor Shellfish Protection District and have done various improvements over the years to protect the Drayton Harbor watershed. In addition, there is no proof per se that Blaine is the source. Yeah.
Would it help if the Shellfish District had something to say to these guys? Would it make any difference?
I don't know at this point, and I guess what I'd like to see is what their decision is going to be. Now that the petition has been separated into two, it gives us a lot easier way to work with them directly, and if we need that, I would have no hesitation to ask. Thank you. In fact, the water quality monitoring that we have done indicates there's some improvement. The other argument about insensitive waters related to the soil types in Blaine having a high water table, and we just quickly pointed out that most of Whatcom County's soil types have a high water table.
Going back on that last one, when you say that a large proportion of the watershed is outside our jurisdiction,
mm-hmm.
does that mean that Whatcom County is the remaining part of the
That's correct.
Watershed? So are Whatcom County involved in this at all, or is it, or is that tied?
Well, the whole Birch Bay piece of this is Whatcom County.
Okay.
And they are definitely involved with the Drayton Harbor Shellfish Protection District. And certainly if this proceeds to the next level, I suppose that we would probably get more and more aggressive with that.
How would they determine what belongs, what part of the watershed or the impaired or sensitive waters is?
Go all the way around the
city
limit. Yeah, I mean, I'm on the Bay Road. I'm in the Drayton Harbor watershed, and so it's considerable distance from Blaine. I think that if you wanted
to figure that out,
The information is out there. If we wanted to absolutely prove that the stormwater from Blaine is not the contributor, you would have to go and take some samples on the city limits in those waters that drain into these outfalls. And that's the type of testing that can be done. It's certainly time intensive, and I don't think it's necessary. But we're kind of taking this as a step-by-step approach.
I remember when you first brought this up, the combination, they were doing this to make the 10,000. Since that's gone away,
they lose a good part of their argument. Yeah.
There is still one other criteria that we can be considered under, and that is our overall growth rate in the decade. So even though their numbers are way off, as Raven pointed out, we didn't grow 80%. Nothing near 80%, we still have hit a threshold there that allows them to file a petition.
Okay.
Thank you, Michael. Looking at Blaine as a contributor of pollutants to the waters of the United States, again, they pointed out the discharges of the outfalls to Drayton Harbor, same argument as the previous slide. They expressed some concern about the boatyards and the marinas, and through providing them a stormwater map, we showed that those outfalls are actually going to separate drainage outfalls that are run by the Port of Bellingham, They expressed concern with the trucks and the truck crossing and the U.S. border sources of pollutants. We, again, through an illustrative map, showed that most of that stormwater actually flows to Canada and is therefore not the waters of the United States. And in our verbal conference with the Department of Ecology employees, she kind of indicated that if we were permitted, they would have an easier time of getting compliance from those bodies. And we indicated in our response that we didn't feel that Blaine should be served as the tool to get compliance from other entities for which we are not responsible. And the final comment is relating to not having a program or staff to address water quality impacts. And this is one I'm actually pretty passionate about, because we are already doing many of the things that I showed you on the first slide. All of our development and all city projects follow the Department of Ecology guidelines. The commitment that the Blaine citizens made to construct one of the most technologically advanced wastewater treatment facilities shows a commitment to environmental excellence that should be recognized. We are very responsive to any of the incident reports when sent to us and we're alerted about any spills or whatnot. We do have a dedicated stormwater fund, and we use it for stormwater programs. And finally, we are committed to connecting septic systems to sewer, as evident by the Vista Terrace ULID that is in the budget, as well as the Harbor Shore step system that has been approved by Blaine.
Did they say anything about the coal transplant?
Yeah. I try to stay away from that topic. So I have a little one-page kind of a reduction of this presentation. If you're interested, I'd be happy to give a copy to you, or I also can answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you, Evan.
All right, Raven, thank you. We'll go to Chief Haslip.
Here.
No, we won't.
It's this little vacant
spot. Mike.
I thought maybe you had him on a direct link from where is he? Italy right now?
Well, he's home.
Oh, is he home?
Right. Yeah, he. But he's barely home. And, he's been in Italy, and he probably has eaten so much pasta he can't waddle over here.
I don't know where my travel gift is. I mean, you know.
Yeah, he'll be back. He'll be in, at work tomorrow. Community development, Mike.
A quick update on the Banner Bank building. We are on schedule to advertise for bid on May 31st with a bid opening on June 19th, and then that would have us here at council to award the bid on June 25th. It looks like we may be able to move that schedule forward a little bit, which would bring us to council on June 11th, but I'll know better after a meeting tomorrow morning with our architects. And regardless of which of those dates, we're on a we're targeting a move-in day of September 6th and 7th. That's Thursday and Friday following Labor Day weekend. And then we'd be open for full business with all services on Monday, which would be the, I guess that would make it the 10th. And so again, that's regardless of which of those schedules we're on, that's the target date. Any questions on that? Debbie has a little presentation that she wants to give on signage over at the Banner Bank building, and we'll see if I can get that up on the screen here.
Okay.
Flashing neon lights.
That's right.
Here, you want to look like Reno?
Need to add jokes.
Yep. Just for your information, you don't have to read the details.
I can't anyway.
You can go back. That's okay. So actually, Michael asked me to do this presentation. I think Gary wanted to give you guys an update on what we were doing related to signage. And apparently the signage issues that we're talking about also related to the lease for the Banner Bank. And apparently that lease has been signed, right? So this was part of that lease program?
It's an appendix, yeah.
An appendix to it? Okay. So this doesn't address all of the signage that we're proposing for the building, but it begins the plan of what the exterior signs would be, as well as the first floor signage. So you can go ahead and move that. Okay, sure. Go ahead. Thank you. Go up really fast.
Okay, yeah, that's to there.
Back up. You can back up a little bit. You're really fast there.
Well, it's a little slow with some of them because they're really big. Oh.
Well, I want to go to the map.
Okay.
So this is actually the site plan for the exterior. You can see there's some signs that there's some parking signs. I don't know if we have to go to this much detail, but parking area, there's some signage here in the front of the building. We have a monument sign planned for this corner here at Martin and Fourth. And then there is an existing freestanding sign, and there's some chain panels to the sign panel changes to this particular sign. So there's really not a whole lot of signs we're proposing at this time. But probably the largest change would be this monument sign here. So we can go ahead.
Okay, go ahead. So this is a rendition of what the monument sign would look like at the corner with some landscaping behind it. And you can see that one of the thoughts that Gary had suggested was that we have flagpoles. And then we're looking at a sign, I think, about a 5x8 sign. Is that right, Michael? Is that what we're talking about? Okay, so that gives you an idea that that would make a big difference on locating City Hall. It would give you that feel of City Hall would be in this building. Okay? And this is the freestanding sign. What we were proposing here is that one of the panels would be Blaine City Hall. We would list the finance building and municipal court, and again, the location of where they are. There's one blank sign for another one of the leased offices. And then we also needed to find a location for office leasing information. So we are proposing that for that sign as well. Okay?
And that part would be temporary only when yes. there was actually space available. That bottom part mostly.
Okay. There's also, we were talking about the parking lot signs. There are a few reserved parking spaces for the police vehicles and the city vehicles. So we'd be signing those. This is a private mail box. And actually, this box is not the one we're proposing. So you can move forward on that. But we've got a drop-off for mail and then also utility payments. It will be included into a one box with mailboxes for each of the city council members as well as a utility payment box, and that would be right inside the door. You know, one of our issues with this huge building is how do we get people to understand where we're located, and since we're not going to change the top of the building sign that says Blaine, our banner bank. So we looked at doing some signage right at the front door on the right of the front door. There is a large window with just a kind of a film. Do they call that film?
Frosting
behind. And then just giving some location of our logo. And then again, making sure people are know that it's the third floor and the fourth floor. Okay?
If you want to go back for a moment, I'm assuming on the fourth floor, we probably also want to put City Council, so that people who have never been here know what
yes.
City Council meetings are?
That's correct, yes. Yeah, these are just renditions. They're things to sort of poke some holes at this point in time. So, yes, that would be definitely need to be added to that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Simple things like when they get into the elevator, how do they know where to go? So we've got some, just a little idea of putting marks here that this is what would be on each floor. And then the directory sign we also have that's at the left of the elevator on the first floor. And then you can see we've got City of Blaine information here where what's located. I actually can't read that. It's too small, but you get the idea. We also have thought of putting in an interior lobby sign at some location. This is just an idea, proposing it over the elevator, and that would potentially be our logo. So it's just sort of an idea. We actually have a very beautiful, is it aluminum or steel? It's a steel, aluminum? Okay, cutout of our logo. And that potentially could go in that location, or we could use it in another location in the building. But so this is just an idea, just to identify ourselves. Okay. Then also on the first floor, one of our concerns is that Banner Bank would take a brunt of people going into the Banner Bank and saying, "Where's City Hall?" So we're trying to avoid that, especially during the first few months, by putting a sign right near the lobby that's a pedestal that would direct the people up to our offices here. We also are proposing a sign at this location that would be a wayfinding sign, so people would see that right away as they come into the door, too. Do we need both? We don't know at this time, but one is temporary, one would be more permanent.
We'd have something like an arrow pointing to Banner Bank saying, "Save." And
yeah.
Stand.
Yeah.
Stand.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so some of the additional signage that we'll be working with, that we are working with right now, is interior wayfinding signs. This was not part of the plan for the Banner Bank. I don't think this is concerning them. This is a second and third floor sign, or third and fourth floor signs, actually. So the idea is we sign locating the, these signs are actually from the courthouse in Bellingham. They have some really nice signage there, very easy to read, and so I took a lot of pictures of their signage. So anyway, the idea is you have directory of signage on the third and fourth floors that direct people to the different offices.
Debbie, okay. Will there be people working on the fourth floor at all times?
Yes.
And there's no court and no city council.
Yeah, the court clerk and assistant court clerk will be on that floor.
Okay. However, the fourth floor will not be open for the public on a regular basis, so
I
the elevator
say,
will
will people be able to walk up there?
No, the elevator and the stairwell doors will be Prox card door locked, and so only people with appropriate security this will be able to do that. Go up there on those non-open days. So for planning commission, council, court, the doors will be unlocked and the elevator will be unlocked. Otherwise, you'll need to pass through security, essentially, to go up there.
Okay, and then the other potential need that we have is for wayfinding signs to the building itself. This is not signed. This sign is not related at whatsoever to City Hall. But it's just to give an idea of what potentially a wayfinding sign could look like. I don't think it would be as elaborate as this because, and we may put other locations on that sign as well. Instead of just having another one panel that says City Hall, I think we might want to utilize it for other locations as well. So that's another signage issue that we're working with for the Banner Bank. Do you want
to? Not particularly relevant, except that we're in the proximity of the post office.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get stopped to ask directions, almost every time it's for the post office. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't know why we don't have anything, or they don't have anything to direct people to the post office. I mean, it's a common occurrence.
Mm-hmm. That's why they're going out of business.
We kind of thought that got people out of their cars into other businesses, so that's the one thing they'll do is they'll get out of their car to find out where the post office is.
To use the mailing service.
That's
our plan for more business to blame.
Yeah.
Keep people lost.
We lost, they have to.
Well, are there going to be any signage on this old building here as to where the new City Hall is? Or
for sale.
the sign that says Blaine City Hall will come down.
Okay.
And there will be signs on the door at the very least.
Okay. So this is not going to be.
Okay. Debbie,
I have a little bit more before we move
on. On Banner Bank?
No, just on some other items.
Okay. Well, I'm still on Banner Bank.
All right. And proceed.
Glad you gave me permission.
I just as a compliment, Debbie has really did a nice job on it.
Absolutely.
And when we presented it to Banner Bank as part of the lease negotiations, they didn't have one criticism of it. They thought it was very good. Particularly, they were impressed with the interior signs. They think that interior signing of the lobby and whatnot is going to work pretty nicely. And we haven't signed Lynn's office until we reach an agreement on sharing the clientele fees. But once we get that down, we can put law office or something. The other thing is the other part of the building is trying to get the tenants located and get offices filled so that we can actually generate some revenues. It appears that, I'm not sure, three or four businesses that were on the third floor are now going to move down to the second floor in the space that immigration law used to be in, that suite of offices. We're going in and building, remodeling that space to add two more offices. So because the market seems to be single offices, small spaces, typically Canadian business, and so we're going to cut their suite of offices up into individual offices. Whether we do that with Bing Han's office or not, they have a very nice suite of offices as well. We're just going to have to work our way through that. But it's possible that we would do the same thing there. And so we're spending about, what do you think? All total, $12,000 to make those modifications in the, on the second floor to accommodate tenants that we we'd like to keep. So, you know, that's another part of the project that, you know, that's ongoing as well, is trying to get the place leased up. Brian's still working. Brian's working as a leasing agent. it's a Freudian stuff.
Same as
and he's doing a good job. So anyway, that's happening as well.
And you're going to ultimately have somebody that is going to manage the building?
I talked to Brian has a management company, and I told him that, you know, this is something that we would have to get quotations from other companies. But we did talk about what are the elements of a property management contract, and so that we kind of know what they're supposed to do, and so when we go out shopping, we can sound like we know a little bit about managing a building. So that's kind of on my back burner right now, but we do need to get after that. And depending on the cost, you know, if it's something that we can afford, and then we definitely should go forward and do it, because it we've already found out that it can, you know, really kind of be disruptive. To have to deal with lights burning out and toilets plugged up and stuff like that. So, yes, we'll look at it.
Okay, good. Gary, another thing, does the money that comes from the tenants, does that go into the general fund, or is it delegated to some other fund?
It does go into the general fund, because our operating expenses come out of the general fund.
Okay, so it goes right directly into the general fund.
That's correct.
How many of those small offices do you intend to have?
There will be six in Suite 2010. And then, as Gary mentioned, in the other space,
have
there may be
more. Have you given any consideration to the executive concept where they have a receptionist for a bunch of offices? And
Gary has considered that, I believe, and talked with Brian a little bit about that as well.
Because I know they're very attractive. I have a lot of clients that have offices like that, and they answer the phone, and it's kind of a mirage. You get there and find out they're a little hole in the wall.
Yeah. That would... We've looked at that. I don't think we're in a position to provide that service.
There are at least three of those, all fairly good size in Bellingham. So if we are going to go that route, it might also be good to talk to some commercial brokers about how the market is for that.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
It's even more advantageous for that kind of service to happen at this building, because those offices serve primarily as mailing destinations. You know, that there are not, you know, there are not 8-5 kinds of places. They're like maybe five times a month.
Got it.
But they're getting material packages all the time, and so
they also have the U.S.
So who's going to receive the packages?
Well, that was the way exports used to have a little side business going where they would take care of all that and forward it and do all these kinds of things. I think probably charged a little extra or charged extra for that. It's a might be a bit of a business opportunity for somebody.
Sure.
We're not going to get into that business, but yeah, Sherry might. We're just learning. Go ahead.
Michael, you're just checking. Okay. Who's on first?
As long as you don't wake me up.
I wanted to give a quick report on park impact fees and the status of that, where we are with that comprehensive plan amendment, which was docketed earlier in the year. And then also I had one other item before we move on. The Park and Cemetery Board did have an initial meeting considering park impact fees on April 19th, and then they're going to be following up at their next meeting, which is this Thursday, the 17th. To kind of give their recommendation and information on that. We did have an initial meeting with the Planning Commission just last week on the 10th, where we talked about what their role would be in a comprehensive plan amendment there. It's actually a fairly complicated thing because we're talking about an impact fee, which is outside of the Planning Commission's purview. We're talking about park planning and capital facilities planning, which is in the Park and Cemetery Board's purview, and then we're talking about a comprehensive plan amendment, which is in the Planning Commission's purview, and then, of course, that all comes to a head here in front of you. And so we kind of we're fleshing that out a bit, and we will have a follow-up meeting on June 14th at the Planning Commission. And it looks like, although we didn't have a public hearing or really do much that night except sort of discuss things, it looks like their direction seems to be to possibly consider a subsidy for projects with a broad public purpose. But frankly, they were having a hard time wrapping their heads around the idea of what residential uses would exactly have a broad public purpose, because park impact fees don't apply to commercial uses. It would only be residential uses that were being considered. So I just wanted to let you know that that is moving forward. Raven and I have talked also a little bit about the transportation impact fee, which is potentially a somewhat more complicated issue, but we will be moving that forward at some point as well. And then the last item that I had comes really in some ways as a request from an individual who is looking at purchasing a large and complete project. And wanted to know if the city would consider some sort of an adjustment in how we charge building permit fees. If a building permit is issued for a project and then the building permit expires because the project goes defunct and just becomes essentially inactive for more than 6 months, the building permit just goes away. It's gone, and you need to get a new building permit. When you apply for that permit, you pay the fees again. And fees are calculated based on the value of the construction, so the amount of work that you're doing. Let's say you're building a $4 million project. You go in and submit your request for a building permit fee, you pay $4 million worth of building permit fees. If someone builds $1 million worth of that project and then stops and the permit expires, next person comes in and has to pay the remainder, which is, say, let's say $3 million, they would pay the fees based on a $3 million structure. So in essence, you've collected fees based on a $7 million structure, even though that's not the work that was done, because you're collecting those fees multiple times. We don't give a refund if someone goes essentially belly up and doesn't finish their project. So the request essentially that's being made is, would we consider altering or creating a new fee structure for a reissuance fee? I thought that had some valid points. One of the main reasons being that a project that is derelict and is sitting incomplete has some serious negative impacts on the city. It is not a good thing for us as a whole, as a community. It actually takes staff time and costs us money just dealing with its existence, and its completion would be good from that perspective as well.
it's going to take staff time, whether it sits there derelict or whether it's completed. This would apply very rarely because we don't have a lot of projects that this happens to. However, right now we might have a small handful. In particular, the primary one is the Marin Condominium project out on Semyonov Spit. And if we were to adopt this fee, projects like that would potentially be able to be eligible for it. What I would suggest is something like a reissuance of building permit fee that is only for substantially consistent design. So in other words, you basically have to building the exact same building. You may be building something slightly different, and that's the whole point of having to go through the review again, because the building code may have changed. So let's say there's been some new things related to holding the roof on, you know, some new fasteners that have to be required in a high wind area. And so that changed, but otherwise it's the same building. Right now the base fee is $365. There's a base fee of $5,600, roughly, for $1 million-plus building. And then we charge $3.65 per $1,000 of value of work. So it's the more valuable the building, the more expensive the fee. For instance, a $4 million building, the fee would be about $20,000 for the building permit. So right now, the supplemental fee is that $3.65. I would suggest that we might consider something like where we have that, because we've already collected that once, and we would perhaps collect 50% the second time and make that $1.83 instead of $3.65 on that dollar evaluation. That would make it a little bit less expensive to move the projects forward. But we do still, I would say, we do still want to collect money, because it does cost money to inspect those buildings the second time. And it costs extra money to review those plans, because it is a new set of plans that has to be gone through. But I think it's valuable for us to consider helping some of these projects get finished. And I wanted to get some indication of whether we should bring back a resolution, because that would be a new fee, and that fee would require going on the schedule by resolution.
Clark has a question.
Yeah, I met with those people this afternoon with the ASC, and I understand they have very little. They're going to change like 200 square feet up a mezzanine or something up top, and maybe some interior walls, I guess a few. But it didn't sound like they were going to do a lot. And the way that they talked about it is getting it done. I mean, they're going to do it like right now. And I just think, so I think we should do anything we can to accommodate that, my personal opinion.
I agree, but the half of the fee is going to cover what our cost is going to be, your cost of review and all this kind of stuff, 20 grand, and you divide that in half, that's 10 grand. I mean,
I feel confident it will, because we already collected the full fee once, so we'd really be getting a fee and a half in the long run.
You can't look at that, because that's in the past.
I know. And that money's gone, and it's right. General fund revenue.
Is the $10,000 going to be enough to cover your expenses from now? That's my question.
I believe it would be, yeah.
I always find this kind of strange. Maybe it's just my mind. But if I'm going to invest $4 million, I'm not going to make my decision on whether I pay $20,000 or $10,000. I mean, I know this going in. I know I'm going to have to come up with $20,000, because I read the rules and I understand them. But now all of a sudden, you know, $10,000 is becoming an issue to me. I'm getting concerned. Hey, is this guy going to finish? Are we going to end up with the same thing all over again? You know, I mean, just, if this guy's fudging on $10,000, how's he going to finish the extra $3 million?
Well, those numbers that I calculated are just my examples and my suggestions on what we might do.
But I'm just saying, he's got to come up with a heck of a hell of a lot more money than $10,000.
He does, and I'm sure he's looking for everything that he can.
And if this is an issue now, I'd have all the bells and whistles going off.
I think the way they make money is they take derelict buildings, they do this all over the country, this one company, and they just fight for every dime they can get. And Yeah, I spent quite a bit of time with them today, and that's really the impression I got. So it doesn't surprise me that they want a deal, you know. They probably deal on everything they can, but I don't know. You're right, $10,000 is not a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yes, Ken.
I'm actually not so inclined to make this change. I mean, it seems to me that, now, I appreciate the fact that you presented this sort of in general, because we are talking about a fee and not something specific to this project. But we all know what project we're talking about.
Well, that's why I said it was very proposed.
I appreciate that. And it just seems to me that, especially in this case, you've got someone who has acquired this property for a substantial discount on what it is actually worth and what was actually put into it. And for them to come and nickel and dime us when there's been a substantial amount of work that's gone on by your office, and then I appreciate the fact that you think we can do the review for $10,000, but I also think that there's going to be an awful lot of inspections we're going to have to do just to make sure that the building is appropriate to even continue on with, based on the fact that it's been out in the weather for as long as it has. My feeling on this is, you know what, no. We've been good partners with this, and you need to help make us whole, and so I'm not inclined to accept this.
That's the $1.38 or whatever it is, that's a lot of money, isn't it?
The $1.83 per thousand.
Yeah.
If it were $4 million worth of construction, it would be approximately $12,000 in fees.
Okay, so it's 10 plus the 12.
No,
it's $5,608.75 plus $1.83 for every $1,000 of value.
So $17,000.
Well, no, it's about $12,000.
Okay. I mean,
so it's like $12,000 for us to be able to go back, re-review all of these plans, what the changes are going to make sure that the building is sufficiently cleaned up that they can actually continue on with it after 3 years of having bird dung all over it.
I have to look at that building every day.
I know. And I appreciate that someone's actually finally going to do something with it. But,
you know,
I think they got their discount. Given, you know how much money was put into that building. They spent considerably less than that to buy it.
Yeah, if these guys are going to quibble over $12,000, we cut it down to six. So they're going to save $6,000. If they can't afford that $6,000, they shouldn't be buying the building in the first place. I think we just tell them, look at this. You know the rules going in.
So is my direction then not to prepare a resolution?
I would not be in favor of it. But maybe I'm out of whack.
I think it opens the door for a lot of things you could do.
Let me ask you this. Is this... My guess is that part of the reason that they proposed it this way, since they are in the business of doing this, is that they have seen or they have convinced other cities to do similar things. Is this sort of a reissuance fee commonplace among other municipalities?
No, I honestly haven't done the research to find that out.
I mean, I'd be more inclined to look at it if we knew that this is something that is fairly commonplace rather than sort of responding to this one.
The other point, Michael, the reason we want to charge new fees is we sort of anticipate that somebody's going to submit new plans. We got to go, and you know, there's going to be changes, and you know, we're going to have to go through all this all over again. You know, we're just assuming these guys are going to finish up what looks like it and what was already submitted. But that may not be the case. When we start, they start diddling around and
one of the things I heard today, Harry, is they're using the same Canadian architects, using the same American architects. They're just those guys are retracing the same ground. Is that your understanding also? They're using the same architects.
It is my understanding that they are putting up the same building.
And again, I have great concerns. The first building didn't sell one unit. Okay? Canadian architect and the whole bit, you know, so
yeah.
So, what guarantee they're going to sell anything in the second building? So, I just, Gary.
Michael, my understanding is that if I were the original owner of Moran and I came in and paid the building permit for a $4 million project, and then it sat there for 5 years and nothing happened, and I started it up again, that permit is still alive?
No.
You'd have to come back and pay it again?
6 months and one day later the permit's expired, and okay. You have to pay all the fees again except for those fees like an impact fee or a general facility fee, which goes to a specific thing and is not tied to the inspection or the building's value. Okay. So you'd have to pay the fee again. The only exception to that we have in the city is for single-family residential projects that were basically completed. And for some reason, someone walked away at the end and, like, essentially forgot to get their certificate of occupancy, and they've, like, been living in it, and they never got it signed off. And there are some of those that people have come back and said, I don't have an occupancy permit. And we go back and look and go, well, as a matter of fact, 12 years ago, you didn't get one. You just started living in the house. We have a reactivation permit for those, $500, and we'll do an inspection and final their building so that they can sell the house, get a mortgage, do whatever it is that they're doing. But other than that, there's no exception.
Okay.
It's pay 6 months. Fees again.
6 months.
Okay. 6 months of inactivity.
Well, Michael asked if we should draft a resolution. My sense of what the discussion is that we should. So you're not supposed to vote on this. So
okay.
Is that all for Michael?
That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Jeff.
Yeah, just real quick. I have a Banner Bank, other Banner Bank topic. Currently, our cashier window hours are 9 to 4. Reception is 8 to 5. Utility billing is 8 to 5. I think planning is 8 to 4:30. So we thought when moving over to the new City Hall, it would be a good opportunity to have a uniform set of hours for all the departments. And we're looking at 8:30 to 4:30. I think the county courthouse has those hours, but it allows, like I said, uniformity of hours that the departments are open, but also allows the employees half an hour before and a half an hour after just to prepare and then wrap up. So we're thinking that would be a good idea for those departments at the new City Hall to have those hours. That's just throwing that idea out there right now.
Except for the city manager. His office hours are from 11 to 12.
Whenever he can be found.
Every other Wednesday.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me. I mean, I think I would be all in favor of that. Yeah. I think it's good to have uniform hours. Yeah, makes sense.
Okay, Cherie.
First item is the June 22nd downtown cleanup. As you know, we did not have our annual May cleanup day, which we, as of last year, was 20 years. But what we did have last year for the first time was a downtown cleanup day, like a beautification day, to prepare the city downtown area for the summer events that were coming up, starting with the July 4th events. And so we plan on having that again this year on the 22nd. And this is headed up by Debbie Harder. She headed it up last year. We have staff that will be taking a walking tour tomorrow between 11 and 12 to take a look at the areas that need some sprucing up. And then there'll be a project plan put together. Staff will determine which items actually need to be taken care of by city staff and which items can be handed over to volunteers to help out. And so council is always invited to volunteer.
That's very, that blackberry bush we worked on last year.
Yep.
It's back.
I know. We should have sprayed it. You didn't think of that, did you?
Your blowtorches work really well for those, too.
Put no poison in the water.
Are we going to advertise this in some form that, that people can volunteer and that we're looking for volunteers?
It's on the website right now.
But I'm talking about...
Slightly less...
For those of us that don't use the computer,
here's your broadcaster.
I know. I was just gonna.
Might be helpful, and I can definitely work with Debbie Harder and see if we can come up with something. Just give him a heads up. The other volunteer event that we have coming up is going to be in October on Make a Difference Day on October 27th, and at that time the city will probably have some kind of a site set up where citizens can drop off recycle only, no garbage or junk, but maybe working with sanitary services for all the different types of recycle, Northwest Recycling, which is the scrap metal, the Appliance Depot, who does train people to fix appliances, and so if you have appliances in pretty decent shape, they'll take that. And so that's the type of thing that we were thinking of having for the actual Make a Difference Day. So it still offers an opportunity for citizens to go through and manage things that they might be able to recycle for the good of the community.
Well, I think the other emphasis of that day is to try to organize our citizens to do a cleanup in their neighborhood, around their church, something like that, to get people together to work, to clean up the community. And I know Ferndale does that with some success. A lot of communities have that kind of an effort that they go through once a year or something. So I think that is the primary emphasis, is to get the community cleaned up and have the citizens work on that, in addition to providing the opportunity for recycling as they do that. So. Okay.
Memorial Day Council meeting. It's actually, since council meeting would normally fall on the Monday, which happens to be Memorial Day, our council meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, and the question that we're putting out to the council is, do you want to have a full council meeting that day, or maybe a shortened meeting, or including the consent agenda, so just kind of leaving it up to the council.
So it's Tuesday, with Tuesday the
afternoon.
The 20, what date is that?
29th or something like that.
29th?
Yeah. It'd be better if it was simpler because people aren't here.
Have we got any items that are coming up at the end of the month?
It'd be better if it was simpler for the day after holiday.
Well, unless there's some items that we need to deal with.
Well, I think what we would probably do is to plan a meeting that needed to do just the basic housekeeping stuff that needs to be done, and if an item comes up that has to be dealt with that evening, if for example, if Raven has something that she has on a time schedule, she can't wait 2 weeks, a bid award or something like that, that would go on the agenda as well. Otherwise,
straight housekeeping.
That would be about it on the meeting. So. You could have an item or two that you would have to act on.
I have no problem with it. Dennis, do you have any problem? Charlie? Okay.
Do you need a motion or anything?
No.
Okay.
So the 29th is going to be just a short meeting.
Through the bills.
And just to mention at this time, too, is we actually have two Tuesday meetings this year. The other one is November 13th, which is the day after Veterans Day. But I don't know, I think that would have to be a full meeting because that's in the budget process.
No,
all that's to worry about November when November comes.
If it comes.
If it comes.
Do you know something we don't?
What's with the...
For some of us, it may not come.
What calendar is that? The end of the world, the Mayan calendar is coming up?
December 21st.
They got new information.
They found a new one, though.
Yeah, we'll be spinning off into the universe anyway. So
it goes about 7,000 years past the one that was expired.
Okay, graduation. We're not. The input I got on graduation was have a meeting. We don't. It didn't. No one was planning on attending. So we're going to go with a full meeting on that day. And your last one.
Planning Commission application report. Council meeting, we had a study session where we had one interview. We had two people originally who applied for the Planning Commission and one of them backed out. So the understanding, my understanding was that council was looking at getting at least another applicant or two for interviews before making a decision. I had advertised in the paper, and we have not received any applications. And so I was wondering what the council wants to do, if they want me to continue to advertise or want to make a decision.
Got to increase the salary.
I suggest doubling it.
Yeah, that's good.
So my question is it seemed like when I first came on the council, it was talk about hiring professional. Was that for the Planning Commission or was that for the hearing?
That would be the hearing examiner, and the hearing examiner would replace a substantial amount of what the Planning Commission does.
I mean, we're having a hard time finding people dedicated. It takes really dedication to be on the Planning Commission.
You would still need a planning commission, though, because there are certain things like comprehensive plan amendments.
But it might be
planning
way different if they didn't. People didn't
have to do as much.
They'd do
10 tons
of work.
Ken,
that was just
a
question.
Ken has a comment. Question.
I can tell you that the Planning Commission would be very much opposed to that, although I appreciate the thought that they would. You know, along these lines, though, one of the things that was discussed at one point was a number of people on the Planning Commission. Do we really need a 7-member Planning Commission? I don't know what the rules are around it. I don't know if there's state law that dictates this, but the workload of the Planning Commission is based on reading documents and discussion at meetings. It isn't like they have things assigned out for people to do outside of that. So, my suggestion is for a community this size that we might want to look at whether we actually need a 7-member planning commission, because I think the issue is not so much that we can't find good people to do the work. I just don't know that we need that many people doing it.
I don't think state law requires that a planning commission have 7 people. I don't know for sure, but I don't think that it does.
Just
in
a few for 6 years.
I think you bring up a valid point. I mean, 7 people is a big body. 6 is not a good number, though, I will point
5.
That out.
It would have to be 5. It would have to be 5.
It's 6 years. But at the rate that the Planning Commission goes, someone will leave here very soon. It's not like me, apparently.
Michael, is the 6 years a concern for people on that commission?
I think that for some people it is. 6 years seems like a long time. I've seen people be more willing to take the terms that are partially used terms.
Yeah.
But then there are some people that have been on and have no problem with staying for a second term or part, they do a partial term and then they do a full term afterwards. But I think when you're first stepping in, 6 years sounds like a long time, but isn't that, Sherry, you were saying that's a requirement?
Yeah, that's our CW.
Yeah.
Michael, could you do a little research and see how what number other planning commissions have, or
and
maybe come back with a recommendation how to deal with this problem? Because it seems to me that we're constantly facing this problem of trying to find people that are willing to serve on it. And then, you know, if we're only getting one or two applicants, it doesn't necessarily mean that we've got a good number of people to select from. So maybe we need to change, A, the number of people that are on and the duration that they're on.
The six-year term is required by the RCW. We can't reduce that, is what Sherry is.
But can't we change the RCW? I mean,
you can call your state representatives and work on that.
There you go.
Hey, Jason.
One other question. Can we, as a city council, if we can think of good people in the community that we think ought to serve, can we recommend that we maybe reach out to them and suggest that they apply?
You want to institute the draft?
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, like, for instance, if I just think off the top of my head, I might propose Lynn Saunders for a seat on the planning commission. So.
You can... Given the situation we have, anyone that can go out and recruit ought to be going out and recruiting.
Outstanding.
And I do that. We do that in our department to some degree, but it's, you know, it's challenging.
So could we then look at seeing what numbers are on other planning commissions? And
I can certainly bring
if
back
a smaller report. Number might be considered by this group.
We could sell two to the...
That's right. Get hockey pucks and sticks.
No, you got
I want to do what that team back in the East Coast thing did where they sold a player for a half
round. So I just have one question. If we go down to five, do I get to make a recommendation on who we eliminate?
assuming that someone hasn't already left by then, sure. But at the rate that they're going, I don't think you're going to get that chance.
I just couldn't leave that alone. I'm just kidding. They all do a fine job, and in fact, some of them would probably willingly volunteer to be that person.
Okay. So Michael's going to bring back some additional information at some point. Yeah,
some ideas for us to consider.
Okay, the calendar. There seemed to be, this calendar, I'm told, is not accurate. I'm trying to see why.
I know of a couple changes on the calendar. One is that for the Planning Commission on the 24th, we are not having a public hearing on the Park Impact Fee Comprehensive Plan Amendment. That will be the first meeting in June instead. And there will be a meeting for Brickyard Cottages variance request at the Planning Commission on May 24th. I think that was the primary change.
Okay.
Which is Brickyard Cottages?
Check the newspaper. It's accurate in the newspaper.
Yeah.
The plat that is on the end of Bayview, near Bayview and Clyde, that went through a development process and then
stopped
and it's been purchased by a new developer, is looking at an alternative plan that was approved for connected single-family homes, so attached single-family homes. They would like to have detached single-family homes, but with a reduced setback between the houses.
City manager, is there anything else that you'd like to... I'd provide comment on?
I think that's it.
Okay. So no public hearing this evening. We have a consent agenda. I have two amounts for payroll. I guess the one highlighted is approval of payables, $463,838.37. And... approval of the April 23rd, 2012 City Council minutes and resolution, I think it's 1607-12, authorizing the closing of funds 304 and 623.
Mayor?
Payroll.
There's the approval of payroll.
I'm sorry, I don't have my glasses, so I'm dealing with, excuse me, payables and approval of the payroll, $452,242.
$1.94. That's correct.
Okay. I did that without my glasses, so.
So
we're doing good.
The letter's bigger.
I know.
Well, it's... It also makes it better on paper.
Yeah.
I so moved with me.
So moved?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Zero. Passes 5-0. Council action items. The first one being the Blaine Whatcom Inter-Local Agreement Growth Management Planning. Michael, is that you?
That is me, and I'm going to keep this really short. This was before you for a public hearing back in November, and the memo that I prepared for prior to that public hearing and was in your packet at that time is included in this packet as well, and it sort of summarizes some of the primary components of this interlocal agreement. One bit of new information is that Ferndale had this scheduled for May 7th City Council hearing or City Council decision, which that was, I couldn't get the information on what had happened before this packet went out. I did confirm today that it was approved unanimously by the Ferndale Council. That would actually make us the last council, the last city considering the interlocal agreement. And basically, just to summarize, what this interlocal agreement does is states that the county and the city will work cooperatively on growth management planning issues, annexations, and a few other things that we are expected to consider or work towards. But you'll see if you go through most of this, there's very little that we're obligated to do, but it does bring us all together on some sort of group to coordinate these issues and also to put us on a common timeline as we move forward, which the planning group is, I'm meeting with them on Friday, all the planning directors for the cities and the county and the long-range planners for the county, and we're putting together a comprehensive plan, UGA update timeline. We're working on that issue now. So staff recommends approval of this interlocal agreement.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Zero. Motion carries 5-0.
Next item is Raven.
Okay, I'm standing in front of you with a change order. You know, like I had to squeeze that on you now. This is pertaining to the 171 reservoir relining. I think I might have mentioned this was coming our way at our last meeting. But to give you just a little bit of project background on the reservoir, sorry, I could not find a pre-construction picture, but I promised to show you some pretty pictures of the inside. The reservoir constructed in 1960 with a million-gallon capacity is probably the oldest reservoir that we have in our system, I believe. It has a dome roof and is partially buried, so if you were to drive upon it, all you'd see is this little crown top. And the project that we're undertaking this year is a repair and preservation effort, and as near as I can tell, other than some minor repairs, it's the first real rehabilitation that we have done since 1960. In addition, there are some piping changes that we're making, including a new bypass line, a new inlet pipe, removal of the existing lining, doing some surface preparation and repair, and then recoating the interior to the high water level. So that was what was planned. Next slide. So what they've done to date is the piping improvements on the outside. In fact, those are going to be connected to our water system tomorrow. And then they've hydroblasted the inside and removed the existing coating. So what you're seeing here are interior conditions of the ceiling that were not visible during design because they were covered by coating and grit and condensation and everything else. And you can see there's some exposed rebar that's rusting, a lot of cracks in the ceiling, and water seepage along the edge from the roof. Next slide. In addition, we're finding some undesirable conditions in the floor that are not structural related, so that is very good, but it is definitely showing that there's some movement underneath the floor, and the rigid concrete hasn't responded well to that. This has had a repair. There's actually some like twine rope on the inside of the crack that then was smeared with some grout, and then the lining was put over that. So again, totally invisible during design, but now quite evident now that the floor has been peeled away and we have it in front of us. So we estimate about 660 feet of that cracking. Next. So looking at how best to address this, I asked our consultant and contractor to come up with a series of alternatives so that we can best address them. And so that I can come to you and confirm that we are proceeding at the right path for the right price. So with the ceiling of the floor, I should probably say, not the ceiling of the floor, because that's very confusing. Sealing the cracks on the floor, we could do something like fill them in with a grout and patch them, mortar them, and call it good. And we estimate just by the linear footage that that would be in the range of $20,000 to $24,000. However, the contractor is recommending a VersaFlex product, which is will respond much more flexibly as the shifting that's caused the cracks has shown. There is some movement there. And also would be less expensive because it's put on in liquid form and then kind of smeared like a putty. And then it's allowed to seal, and then the specified sealant would then go over that. So that is something that we are recommending that we proceed with. Looking at the roof deterioration, we actually looked at several items, as you can see from the price, and they each have a range of possibilities to them, but the one thing that was the most telling for me in how to make a recommendation to you is that this reservoir has lasted for 50 years without a major repair. Other than the floor, which we don't have any, no one in Public Works is aware of, so it's been more than 25 years since we've done those floor crack fixes. But if we were to fix the interior of the ceiling with something that was impermeable, anything that's coming through the roof would then be trapped and it would encourage further corrosion. If we were to coat the roof with this Sealist product that's in the middle there, it's actually a permeable material, but it stops the corrosion. So, yes, some water would still permeate through the roof. That's not a terrible thing, as long as it's not causing corrosion to our infrastructure. And the Cadillac option would be to remove and expose the exterior and coat it from the exterior to prevent the infiltration. But as you can see by that price tag, that was the most expensive option. And then finally, the cracking that we saw on the walls, we could do along the line of what we had proposed for the floor, kind of a, they call it a sack and patch, but essentially a mortar with some concrete. It would work, but it would also be very labor intensive and thus expensive. And instead of that, the contractor's recommending you go with the specified coating on the walls, but just do it a little thicker. And that's the cost that you see there. So I wanted to, putting Michael to sleep, sorry. I thought you might ask this question, so before I give you my recommendation and rationale, I just thought I'd answer it a little bit. And that is, I kind of look at this reservoir as the little box with the question mark on it. It was a very dark, large field space that we had people climb in and look around with flashlights and do their best to specify something. But a lot of it was covered up and hidden from view, not visible. And until that coating was uncovered, very hard to determine what we should have done. However, I do believe that we should have had more of a contingency plan in place for the bad cracks that we found for a facility of this age. But frankly, I wasn't here to recommend that, and I think that we did the best that we could with what we had. And what it boils down to is what was observable, and now how do we deal with what we found. So moving toward my recommendation, I recommend that we do the crack flex seal with the flexible product. I think it will offer us a much better protection. Like I mentioned, the cracks indicated movement of the floor, and the mortar as the other option would not deal with that. And it also would be a lot more expensive. And since the concrete and mortar was kind of used once and it didn't work, why would we want to do that again? Relating to the roof, like I said, there is significant seepage coming from the exterior. To do anything on the Cadillac option would take a lot in terms of time and schedule as well as cost. Talking to our consultant, he said, yeah, that option would probably extend the life of the ceiling another 75 years, but then it would be out of time with the rest of the improvements that we're doing in the reservoir, which is probably more in the range of a 40 to 50 year improvement. So our choice, my recommendation is to stop the corrosion now and allow the infiltration. It'll slow it down considerably. And if we ever do want to do the Cadillac option to the roof at a future date, we can always do that with another contract. And then finally, the recommendation relating to the sidewall is pretty much a cost consideration. Yes, it could be done with concrete, it would be done well, but it would be faster and cheaper to do it by just making the coating product a little bit thicker. So with that, I'm here if you have any questions, and if not, I request your approval to execute this change order. I will say one just kind of aside, and that is, this, we do feel like we've exposed everything, so I don't think that I will be coming back to you again for this project.
Dennis, do you have a question?
No, I move we approve the work order.
Seconder? Seconded by Clark. Is there any other questions, comments? Seeing none, call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
One thing I would
recommend,
Mayor, is that we not hire any consultants, engineering consultants, that do not have X-ray vision.
That's our problem. Is
that's the right. We always seem to be coming up against these things that no one can see.
Either that or hiring blind guys.
They can't look through the ground. They can't look through concrete. I don't know how good they are.
But the point was raised that I think we have to be a little careful on the contingency, how we approach these things. And particularly when we're going into a project where you can't see what you're up against, then we have to be a little more. I think when it's presented to us, it has to be presented to us, hey, this is a, you know, everybody's best guess, and there's a good chance that something may go wrong.
Well, even with contingencies, I mean, most of the time on change orders, you're talking about a couple percent, a 20% increase in the project.
That's a
25%.
The consultant and I talked about it this morning, and he said he did regret not putting more in the budget for contingency. I think maybe he was a little bit shy because, as you know, the project came in over budget last year. We, you know, rejected all bids, and I don't think he wanted to go through that again. But, you know, all things aside, you know, it's not a blame game with me. It's about how to best address risk and how to best communicate to you. So I have
thank you for that.
Promise I'll do my best to let you know this project might be a little risky. This would have been high on that list, though.
Well, we've failed to meet the goal of the 7:30 executive session, but we're getting close.
Okay. That's the only item left. I would ask that the council, after you do whatever else you need to do, that we go into executive session, and you will have an action item
following.
When you come back in to regular
session. How long do you anticipate we would be in executive session?
15, 20 minutes.
Ken?
I know that in the finance report we discussed the funds. I don't know that we actually took action on this request to close these two funds. It's in the packet. I don't see it.
That was in the consent.
That was on consent. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Never mind.
Unless there's any unfinished business or council new business,
Just the one question about the guy that wanted to do the race car thing out at the airport.
I told him no.
Okay. Any other questions or new business? We'll adjourn for the executive session then.
Can I just one quick little thing, speaking of me telling somebody? We had spoken about removing the trees near Skolman's Park.
Yes.
I also told Michael not to do that.
Good.
It just, I think Raven's the one who kind of convinced me, but as I went and looked at it, it's just such an integral part to the park. And if we sell that property and somebody wants to buy it with the trees on it, they can cut them down and it'll be a wash, I think. They'll sell the wood, they'll pay for the cost, and it's not a big cost expense to someone who would potentially buy that property. We also need, Michael and Raven and I spoke about this, we need property to build storage on. That's a need that we've had for quite a while. And we're using the hangar building, the newer hangar building now, for the police and public works. When that property sells, that building's not going to be available anymore, and we need to get serious about building some storage. And that piece of property could conceivably be used for a place where we could put up a pole building or something like that.
So these decisions fall under the executive.
It's an executive decision.
The executive
made decision. On the spur of the moment.
Okay, appreciate that.
Similar to Chase or.
Hopefully, it doesn't cost us. Even 1%.
J.P. Morgan. Yeah. What is it?
How long do you think?
Hey, Michael.
I'd say 20 minutes tops.
Lincoln Park yesterday.
Could be two.
All the places that we had all the mud issues all gone.
I heard 15. I got a fishery report today.
It's two, I think.